Welcome to Neo Chats, an interview-style podcast focusing on educating neonatal nurses, caring for newborns and their families, hosted by Jenna Morton. It is a project of the Canadian Association of Neonatal Nurses, a nonprofit organization committed to the health and well-being of newborns and their families.
Hello, and welcome to Neo Chats. I'm your host, Jenna Morton, and in this episode, we're exploring the topic of diaper dermatitis. My guest is Jean Scotland, who currently leads a neonatal skin injury prevention quality improvement program, the Calgary Zone NICUs within Alberta Health Services. I'm so glad to have you here and to have this interesting discussion focusing very specifically on this topic. And just for everyone who's listening, to make sure we all understand what we're talking about, what is diaper dermatitis?
You know, it's interesting. It's known as a diaper rash or a nappy rash or a moisture-associated diaper dermatitis. There's lots of different terms that you can use for it. But in essence, there's really the term dermatitis denotes that there's some type of inflammation and some type of erythema, which is redness to the skin. It can be associated with erosion of the skin, but it doesn't necessarily need to be. So there's really two components to it that are absolutely essential, which is some type of inflammation and some type of redness.
How prevalent is this within the neonate community that we see in the NICUs?
That's a very good question, because there's literally so much that's written on diaper dermatitis, but it's never really tracked that carefully in units. So the prevalence depends upon actually how good your tracking system is. But suffice to say that the literature shows that there's probably an incidence between anywhere between 7 and 25%, depending on which article you're reading. But I think it's actually more important to know what your prevalence is within your unit. So I actually check and do prevalence ratings in my unit. And at any given time, in any one of my hospitals within my region, we can sit up to 25% of infants with some form of diaper dermatitis. That's important to know, because when you actually start doing programs to see if you can decrease your incidence of diaper dermatitis, or that the interventions that you're going to use to see if it helps with decreasing the incidence of diaper dermatitis, you really need to know what your own levels are.
I think some people, especially outside of the healthcare industry, hear, oh, diaper rash, well, every baby gets that. Why is it such a concern, especially for this population?
Yeah, it's another great question. We know that infants who suffer from some form of diaper dermatitis, whether that's even just that erythema on the skin with a little bit of edema, or the full-blown, full-thickness ulcer that develops, we know that they actually have an increase in crying, agitation. It can actually affect some of their eating and sleeping behaviors as well, too. And we know in adults, they say that it hurts. So though babies can't tell us it hurts, we know that it hurts, and we know that there's pain involved with that. And there is a multitude of literature explaining what pain and the adverse effects it can have on a neonate. So number one is the pain issue. The second one is, once you have a breakdown to a skin, and it does depend whether it's a partial or a full thickness burn, you can actually, the skin itself never fully returns to its original pre-wound properties. So, for example, if we end up getting that the wound itself is getting quite low and we get some scar formation occurring, it can only return to 80% of its tensile strength. And that's for life. That's not just a short period. That's for life. And so you're setting the baby up for long-term potential in having that area broken down frequently. And may not necessarily be in adulthood when they're, you know, good continents, but later on as seniors, it may become a problem for them. We don't know that literature, but we do know that once it's a full thickness, that you only have 80% tensile return to that skin. The other thing that's important as well, too, even if it's a partial thickness. And so partial thickness, I mean that affects just the epidermis and dermis layer, and I can go through that later if you want me to. But there is actually some evidence to suggest that perhaps that a partial thickness wound in a baby will not act the same as, you know, not return to its normal function as well too. So the skin itself, we change the architecture of it. We change how it now acts, and that's important. And I think the third thing that's important to know with these as well is the guilt that come involved with parents or caregivers related to the diaper dermatitis. So parents, if their babies develop a diaper rash, they go, oh my God, it's my fault. It's something that I did. It's something, there's a guilt involved in that. And diaper dermatitis is not simple. There's a complex factors that are many complex factors that go on that actually produce this diaper dermatitis.
Can you talk a little bit more to that as to what some of those different factors might be? Because I'd imagine then that also would play into some of the different prevention methods that you're researching and using.
Yeah, no, for certain. So like I said, there's a complex interaction between many of these factors. And to understand them, you need to understand just and I'm going to be very brief about the functions, the layers of the skin and what they actually do, because it's how these factors play upon those layers of the skin that predisposes the skin to breaking down. So we have really three layers to our skin: your epidermis, your dermis, and your subcutaneous fat. The epidermis layer is your very outer layer of your skin. It's composed of five distinct layers, and with each one of those layers, there can be multitude of layers built on top of it. So you think of your epidermal layer, your very top layer of your skin, as your bricks and mortar. It's the one that keeps substances that we don't want in our skin from coming inside. So it's like that body's initial first line of defense against things coming into the skin. And more importantly, it keeps things from getting outside too. So we don't lose too much water or too much salt or things that we want to get out of our system. So it's that interplay between the inside and the outside world. So it's that bricks and mortar, it's that brick wall that keeps things from coming in and out. Our next layer is our dermis layer of our skin. And think of it as your strength and flexibility. So it's the one that has the elastin and the collagen that's in there that allows us to be able to bend our skin without cracking it, right? And gives us that strength so that if we get a little bump, we're not breaking down stuff right away. And finally is our subcutaneous fat. And our subcutaneous fat is involved in helping us with temperature regulations, cushioning, so that if I sit on this chair for a long period of time, I'm not getting a pressure ulcer. It actually helps to relieve some of the pressure as well. So the problems with babies is that they especially preterm babies, lack in all three of those areas, which predisposes the skin just on its own for breakdown. So far as the epidermis layer goes, the epidermal layer, the very top layer, which is your stratus corneum, it is in you and I, we may have, let's say the bottom of our feet, we may have 100 layers thick of stratus corneum, where your eyelid will have maybe 25, 30. So that's why you can, you know, step on something on your foot and it just doesn't react as much as if you had it in your eye. Whereas a preterm infant's, that stratus corneum layer is maybe 20 layers if you're lucky, maybe a term. And a baby that's born 25 weeks, we in essence say that they have zero stratus corneum layer. So when you think of it that way, anything that goes on the skin can be instantly absorbed into the skin. And anything inside the body that we don't want to get out can easily get out again, right? So we have a problem with, we think of them as essence having none of that outside layer of that skin. And I tell people, think of it like putting something, anything that you put on the skin, it's like putting it in a cup and having the baby drink it. The absorption is almost the same when you don't have that stratus corneum layer to your skin. So that's a problem. And the layers between the epidermis and the dermis that gives that real strength to the skin, we have these bindings that hold those two layers together. And so if I, let's say, rub against something, I'm not going to cause an abrasion. because I have that strength and that flexibility there. Preterm infants don't have those same anchorings between the epidermis and that dermis layer. And so if I was to put tape on and tear it off, I'm actually tearing apart that epidermis from that dermis layer. I'm causing stripping with that. So the friction is their damage secondary to friction is increased as well too. And then thirdly, they have no subcutaneous fat, like zero subcutaneous fat. So that layer is almost completely gone when you're talking about prevention of pressure and body temperature regulations and stuff like that. They just don't have that. So their skin itself sets them up. And then put on top of that other factors that's going to break it down. So when you think of a diaper dermatitis, the probably the number one thing is that excess moisture that's available. So for some reason, there's extra moisture on the skin that collects and kind of macerates the skin, or, you know, embeds, waterlogs the skin is another term for that. Once that happens, and moisture that is, or skin that is overhydrated, that bricks and mortar of the skin breaks down. And so you get leakiness, so that the proteins it's more the lipids when you're talking moisture. The lipids break down and it allows that connection between that bricks and mortar to open up even more. And so anything that's now on the outside of the body is way easier to get inside of the body. So these foreign particles enter into the skin. These foreign chemicals can be just about anything, but can also be things like fungal or bacterial, which now you have superimposed a fungal and a bacterial infection as well. But when a foreign body enters into our body, our first body's line of defense is, hey, I got to stop this invasion. And we get inflammation. And that's where the inflammation happens within the diaper dermatitis. So the first one is that the overhydrated skin will allow for more absorption. It also allows for that more friction as well too. You can imagine, as I just talked about, those principles of friction. So you overhydrate the cells, you weaken them. There's more risk for friction occurring within the diaper dermatitis. You're weakening that dermal layer of the skin, and so decreasing the tensile strength of the skin. So not only do you have risk of that, what we consider a top-down injury, so things coming into the skin from the top, but you now have risk of pressure and that bottom-up injury. So it's more of a pressure putting on the lower structures, causing some ischemia, breaking down those cells. So you can potentially have mechanisms working from the top down and from under the skin up because of the structure of the skin. That's the one mechanism, that overhydration and the mechanisms they play on that invasion into the skin, the dermis layer, and, you know, the top down or the bottom up, top down injuries. The other thing that our stratus corneum has, or that very top layer of that epidermis, is what we call the acid mantle. So our skin is acidic, and it's meant to be acidic. As soon as we make it more alkaline, or we increase the base of our skin, we begin to break down that acid mantle. And when you think of it, the acid mantle in our skin, bacteria doesn't like to live in an acidic environment. So it's the very first, one of the very first defenses we have that keeps pathogens from coming inside of our skin. And so when we macerate the skin a little bit, or we put harsh chemicals on it that changes that pH of that skin, we increase the risk of diaper dermatitis as well too. And one of the things, I'm just going to throw it in, because the vernix that we have when babies are born with that white, nice white creamy substance on their skin, you see sometimes people tending to wipe it off and get rid of it. That's the worst thing you can do, because the vernix actually adds some of the lipid layers to the skin. It helps with our acid mantle, because babies are initially born with a fairly high pH. And it's only over the next few days that it drops down to a low, which is where we want it. The vernix helps protect the baby while that actually happens. So keep the vernix on. Don't remove it. It'll help in some of that protection as well too, but that's kind of a side note. And then finally is the substance itself. So when you consider the area that we're talking about is the diaper, the skin is exposed to both urine and to stool. And so urine, when it breaks down, there's urea in it, and it breaks down to ammonia. And ammonia has a very high pH. So if you leave urine on the skin, you're destroying that acid mantle and increase risk of breakdown with that. Stool, and particularly liquid stool, formed stool not so much, but babies never have formed stools. They're always a little bit liquidy. And it's because they don't have, the stool itself doesn't absorb as much as the nutrients going through. So you have more substrates in the stool, a little bit more liquid. And these substrates actually break down the protein, not the lipids, but the protein of that stratus corneum layer. And so not only now that mortar part, you're not only just breaking down the lipids, but you're breaking down the protein as well too. And in combination, you have both urine and stool together. They're lethal when it comes to breaking down that skin. So urine does it on its own, stool does it on its own, but for some reason you combine the two together and it's like exponential the amount of damage that you can actually do. So all those involved, so urine and stool alone may not necessarily break down the skin, but you put all those other factors into it, particularly for preterm babies, puts them at great risk for developing that diaper dermatitis.
Hearing that, I think as a parent, helps alleviate a little bit of that guilt though, because you realize you really can't do anything about that.
Exactly.
And especially with a preterm, you're waiting for those times when there is something in the diaper you can see.
Yeah. And so, there's lots you can do to actually prevent some of that stuff. But the basic skin structure itself, you're right. We just have to live with that. But there's lots we can do to actually decrease, some of those from occurring. But it's just not one thing.
So what are some of those steps, those prevention steps that we can be taking? Yeah.
Can I talk a little bit about product first?
Sure.
Because when you actually talk about the prevention and then treatment, I start to talk about a lot of product. And you need to have an understanding of basic products that we should or should not use in the neonate and the reasons behind some of them. So I'm going to start by saying that there's a gazillion products out there. Well, probably not a gazillion, but there's a lot of products out there, right? And there's so much confusion around which product to use and which not to use. And that includes what you wipe the bum with and creams that you actually may put on the bum itself, right? So I'm going to not name any product by name, but I'm going to actually give you some of the principles around which ones to choose. And so to start with, neonates, when choosing a product for them, you want minimal additives, minimal chemicals. Because remember I said that thin stratus corneum, think about putting in a cup and drinking it. So you don't want babies drinking those chemicals or added perfumes or, you know, additives, things like that. So the least amount that you can get in the cream, the better for these babies. But in saying so in doing that, you're taking away some of those preservatives as well too that are often found in creams. So you need to be more careful with some of these products because they may actually expire sooner than what you want. You need to be careful not to cross-contaminate them, not to mix them, stuff like that. You have to be extremely careful with some of the products for that reason. So when we talk about, first of all, with those kind of in mind, what do we cleanse the bum with to start with? Right. And so some recommend a commercial wipe, but there's some studies to show that they do contain preservatives, and these preservatives have been linked to sensitize the skin. So be very careful. So I'm not going to recommend any one product, but if you happen to use a commercial wipe and you notice that your baby is breaking down, it could be secondary to the skin sensitivity and something within that wipe itself. So you may want to try something different, right? There has been studies shown looking at the difference between using some of these commercially prepared wipes and just regular old, you know, cloth and water. The literature is really mixed on that. Some show that the commercial wipes are maybe better. Some show that maybe a little bit of water and soap, or just water, it's with a cloth is better. Some show no difference between them. The literature is really mixed on which one to use. But suffice to say, if you're going to use a commercial wipe, they suggest to make sure that it's soft, non-woven, non-fragrant, alcohol-free, and pH balanced. It's a lot to remember. if you're going to use water, you have to really take care not to rub the areas, because water itself doesn't have a phosphate in it to actually break down and get the stool off the skin. So you may want to use maybe a little bit of mineral oil or something like that to help loosen off the stool with that as well. If you're going to use some type of cleanser, make sure that the pH sits between 5 and 5.7. There is some, I don't know if it's so much evidence, but recommendation to suggest we shouldn't necessarily be using some of those cleansers on babies who are under 28 weeks, again, because of the principles of the stratus corneum. So particularly under 2 weeks of age. After 2 weeks, you're starting to mature those layers of the skin, so it's not such a big deal. So right now, we're recommending under 28 weeks and under 2 weeks of age, just use water, maybe sterile saline on those skins to cleanse it for now. But you may need to change that with that. We don't recommend really any powders on skin, on baby skin. So those baby powders and stuff you see, talc powder, really not recommended at all. And again, one of the issues is the inhalation of the fibers as you actually use the powder. Now, later on when we talk about treatment of diaper dermatitis, I'm going to talk about using the powder in there, but we use it a very specific way. And so we'll go into that, but generally powders are not recommended. When you're talking topical creams, again, there's three basic categories to them. You have what is called your emollients, your humectants, and your moisture barrier. So think of emollients as things like silicone, dimethicone, lanolin. They actually add lipids to that stratus corneum layer. So they are giving moisture, helping to give that moisture back to the stratus corneum. Humectants contain products like urea, lactic acid, glycerin. Those really don't have a place, I think, in neonatal skin. They're meant to be used on very dry skin, but what they do is that they actually take water from inside and attract it to the epidermal layer to be added to the skin. Well, these babies, we have a hard enough time keeping their water balance within their bodies, right? So it's actually not recommended with that. And then when you think diaper dermatitis is a problem of overhydration, so we really shouldn't be putting something like that on to hydrate the skin in that way. There's just no place for it, particularly in diaper dermatitis. And I don't believe in anywhere on a neonatal skin. The last one product we kind of think about is those barriers. So things that contain things like zinc that give a barrier to that skin. They don't add any moisture to the skin, but they just keep things from going into the skin, you know, that we don't want to go in. So when we're looking at choosing these products, we want one that contains, and this will simplify it, one time, like it, you should have one of the ingredients. You'd have a petrolatum, a dimethicone, which is a silicone-based ingredient, or a zinc. So if you're looking at your petrolatums, you want to make what it does is it enhances that skin integrity. It adds that lipids back to the stratus corneum layer. It's considered a water-in-oil formulation. So it helps protect the skin against some of that maceration from occurring, and it does give some skin hydration. The dimethicones are actually I like them as an ingredient within skin product. It's a relatively new, I don't know if it's new in the last little while in that it's that silicone based one, and it's a oil and water formulation. And so it provides even greater hydration to the skin. Because it's a water and oil, though, it doesn't give a lot of protection against the irritants. So it's great for moisture, but doesn't give a lot of protection. Zinc provides the most effective protection against that irritants. And it cannot be absorbed into the skin unless it's labeled as such. So if it's labeled as a nanoparticle, it can be absorbed into the skin. But most diaper dermatitis products with babies, zinc is not a nanoparticle. So they should not be absorbed. But it's often mixed in some other type of carrier. So you'll often see it mixed in the petrolatum or the dimethicone. So when I'm choosing for my treatment of diaper dermatitis and I'm choosing which zinc to use, and this is more advanced, I will be choosing a zinc based on how much petrolatum's in it compared to how much dimethicone, because I'm going to look at that wound and decide which one I want more of. So it becomes a little bit more complicated, but suffice to say that when you look at your zinc, it'll contain either one or sometimes maybe even a combination of both of those. What you'll find a common practice in neonatal units is people take these products and they mix them together. So you'll have somebody that takes a petrolatum and mixes it with the dimethicone and then mixes it with a little bit of zinc, and they have these mixtures at these. So I want to just stress, stop doing that. Like, these products are designed for a specific reason, and we know what they do in their purest form. When you mix them with something else, it changes the chemicals of that cream, and we may not know what we're doing anymore. So I am always bothered when I see creams mixed at the bedside. Sometimes, and when we get into the treatment later on, I sometimes suggest to use one cream and then another one on top. And the nurses will say to me, well, why can't I mix them together? That's the reason why. I'm specifically using the barrier for one reason and my petrolatum for another reason. And I do want them as two very distinct layers, not mixed together. The other thing is, again, some of these don't contain preservatives. So now you are mixing at the bedside. We don't know if there's cross-contamination going on. And I have no idea what the shelf life of these are anymore. So I would suggest really no mixing of products at the bedside.
So many people would just kind of instinctively do that, thinking, oh yeah, this will help. I can do both things and I can, and you're actually being counterproductive.
Exactly. To save a step, but you don't in preterm. Now, I'm not talking adult here, because the adult literature does that 3-in-1, where they clean, they moisturize and protect, and it's an all-in-one wipe. Those wipes have not been studied in the neonatal population, and so I don't recommend them for the neonatal population. So we still have to do that old school. We have to think of the three very separately, right?
So moving from the products to how you use them and when you use them.
And I will talk a little bit later because we do, I sometimes use a silicone-based film as well too. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And the use or not use of hydrocortisone cream, but we'll talk about that when we come to treatment. But so first of all, for prevention of diaper dermatitis, I actually first off recommend, and there is some evidence to suggest that it's probably good to do, is when a baby's first born, before you stick that diaper on, first of all, keep the vernix, but stick a little bit of petrolatum on it. Meconium, when it comes out, can be quite sticky. And it can really stick hard to that skin. And if you have particularly a 25, 26, 27 weeker, and you have this meconium come out and it's sticking hard to that skin, you can actually strip some of those layers of the skin just by trying to get that meconium off. So try to get some petrolatum on that skin right away and protect just from that first meconium coming through. We know that having a standardized diaper dermatitis protocol to follow is a really good thing. Example, in my unit, when I first started to look at this, I would go to the bedside and say, you know, figure out how people are treating diaper dermatitis or even skincare itself. I would see like 5 or 6, 7 different products sitting at the bedside. And it would have been 6 or, you know, like they all could have been used within a 24-hour period. Sometimes parents brought them from their home because they thought it was better. And different ways of cleansing the bums, airing versus not airing the bum was a problem. And so there was never consistency. It was always based on what people wanted to do or thought was best for the baby, not necessarily based on science. We do know that if you're going to start a treatment, you should carry it on for 2 or 3 days and be very consistent to see if you can get healing occurring with that. And so coming back to that prevention, that consistent approach in the way to do it, and if we can prevent diaper dermatitis from occurring, wouldn't that be great? And that's our goal. So I actually do recommend a daily bum bath. And lots of the protocols and published protocols use that concept of once a day, getting a very mild cleanser on that skin, cleaning it off, you know, washing it away with a little bit of water to start fresh. And that's really to get away from the urine and the stool on the skin. So as you start to add products to that skin, the last thing you want is urine and stool under that skin, between the skin and the product, because it's just going to break it down. So daily bum baths are a good thing. And then you choose your products that are intended to stay on the skin. So even with each diaper change, you don't want to completely remove all that product. You want it to stay on so that you're giving that layer always between the product, the skin, and the stool. It always remains kind of as this barrier between the two. Once a day, nice bum wipe. But remember, anytime we put soap or even a mild cleanser on the skin, you are putting that acid mantle at risk. So you don't want to do it all the time. But, you know, once a day, just to make sure that stool is gone, is probably not a bad thing to do. If you notice that it's a little bit red afterwards, you got the wrong product, you got to try something different and really watch that pH, what you're using with it. So once you do that daily bum bath, if the skin looks intact, everything looks good, get a petrolatum on that. Get some type of petrolatum or dimethicone if you want to, but either one, you know, a nice cream like that will work, but mostly a petrolatum is good. Think of it when you put the cream on as icing on a cake. It has to be thick, not thin. You put lots of it on, right? And so with each diaper change, every time that baby stools or pees, you're just removing the cream that actually has the contaminant on it. Apply more cream, and then you're good for your next diaper change. So the petrolatums tend to be clear, which means that you can watch the skin integrity underneath. You can see if it's starting to turn red. And if it's red, now you're moving into the treatment of the diaper dermatitis. But you can actually watch the integrity of the skin with that. Some have suggested putting breast milk on the skin. And breast milk is great. Like, honestly, I put it on anything on those babies. Now, the studies that are out there that I could find, at least, show really not a lot of difference. Maybe there's a little bit better so far as treatment goes with the barrier creams as to the breast milk, but really breast milk is not going to hurt. It actually has an anti-inflammatory property to it as well. And there is some studies to suggest that instead of using hydrocortisone, which I would never use on a baby, because there's increased risk of absorption and Cushing's syndrome on them, that use of breast milk is as effective as hydrocortisone cream in taking down that inflammation. So think of breast milk with that as well. The other thing in prevention is what we call just diaper-free time. So if you can expose that bum to air just to give a little bit of diaper-free time. Now, I'm going to put a huge caution on that because, number one, it should never, ever be used to treat an open wound. Wounds are meant to have moist wound healing. And you always hear, oh, let's just expose this sore bum to air and it'll heal it up. It won't. As soon as you dry out a wound bed, you limit the new cells coming in, you limit the new development of blood vessels coming in, and you stop the healing of a wound. So a wound is always meant to have moist wound healing. Now it has to be a balanced moist wound healing. You don't want it too moist. You don't want it too dry. It has to be that balance, right? So that exposing a butt to air should never be done if there is an opened wound. That wound should never be open. And so if you don't have any diaper dermatitis and you're trying to prevent it, go ahead, you know, expose it. But The other problem is that now you have a baby that has slightly compromised layers of their skin, and exposing the butt to air, you have no creams on it. You have no barrier. So now when they poop and pee, you're exposing those substrates to a skin that has no barrier cream on it. So even exposing our baby's butts to air, we have to do it with extreme caution. It's not something that it's a benign practice to do. So if you want to do it, really keep those in mind. And it's a vigilant thing. You have to make sure they stool, you have to get rid of it right away. Is the wiping increasing the friction and increasing the risk of diaper dermatitis? It's a balance that you have to do with that. So that's kind of what I think of the prevention. And lots of diaper changes, you know, frequent diaper changes. Don't let them sit in a long period of time. And in the neonatal units, we all have those highly absorbent diapers that have a breathable cloth on the outside, perfect for our babies. At home, there's lots of literature around cloth versus commercially prepared diapers. I'm not going to go into that, but there's those to kind of consider as well too. So that's prevention.
And when the prevention does not completely prevent,
exactly,
we get into treatment.
So when you're talking about treatment, you always want to begin with identification of the cause and eliminate the irritant, and then you can start to treat the wound, right? There's important emphasis before you get into treatment that I think you need to just to kind of keep in the mind. Skin assessment is probably the most important thing you can do. So it is both before, during, and after each strategy that we use, we have to make sure that we are assessing that skin correctly. And more importantly, using the correct terminology. I sometimes say, I'll go in and they'll say, Jean, I want you to come see this excoriated buttocks. And I'll go in and I'm like, okay, I don't see excoriation here. Like I see erythema, redness. I see a little bit of inflammation, but I don't see any excoriation. Oh that's what I'm talking about. That's excoriated. That's not, right? So our terms, be very careful with how we use them. So erythema refers to the redness, edema or inflammation. You can use either term. When you talk erosion, it simply means that you've lost the epidermal layer of your skin. It doesn't tell you how you lost it, but you've lost that top layer, that epidermal layer. Ulcer means that you're extending down into the dermal layer, potentially into the subcutaneous fat, and exposing some of those tendons and bones. So the ulcer depends on the width of it, but it has to be beyond that epidermal layer. Preterm babies are at great risk for developing ulcers because of their immaturity and their lack of layers of their skin, right? So to develop an ulcer is quite easy for babies to do. Denuded skin is the loss of the epidermal related to some type of exposure to urine, stool, body fluids, maybe wound exudate. It's that denuded skin secondary to some type of substrate that's been sitting on the skin. Excoriated skin is what we think of in the wound world as some type of mechanical force that's ripping away that epidermal layer. So they're very different terms, not that it matters to a parent, but in my world, when I come in, all those matter, and they all matter, and I'm going to treat them all slightly differently. So I think to start with, we want to make sure that we really use that correct terminology. And I think I was saying earlier is that we want to allow each treatment, when we do it, 2 or 3 days to see if it's going to work. That's the length of time that it should take to see some improvement. And again, that's why your assessment becomes really important, because let's say I have a partial thickness wound and I want to see that feelingization coming across that wound bed. Only looking at and assessing that wound, can I see that progression of those cells moving across the wound, then I know that that wound is healing. By correctly measuring it, looking at the depth, looking at the peri-wound or the wounds or the skin surrounding the wound, all those matters in knowing how that treatment is working. But I do need to give a couple days. So if, let's say, I start a treatment of some type and I go in and assess that wound the next day and I'm going, oh my God, it's worse, I may stop that treatment because I know it's getting worse, not better. But on the whole, you should give it 2 or 3 days. Adding more products, doing different techniques is not going to, you're not helping yourself in seeing what actually works. So give yourself 2 days. If it persists, let's say you tried 1 or 2 techniques and it's still not getting better. That's when I think you really need to get somebody involved, a healthcare professional that really has some expertise in neonatal skincare. Now, not all areas have that, unfortunately, but I think you have to start thinking for your own region. Who can I look at to help me with some of this stuff? Because not all diaper dermatitis is secondary to those factors or those mechanisms that I talked about. Some can be some underlying skin diseases themselves. And that person may be able to help you recognize that we've moved beyond normal diaper dermatitis. We're into other things. They also are expert at that assessment and knowing what treatment plans to use and when to start using an example fungal cream, when we may need to try a limited period of a hydrocortisone cream to help the wound move out of an inflammation stage, to when to actually maybe use an antibacterial. So those kind of things are more complex things that we'd be looking at when we're looking at this diaper dermatitis. But suffice to say that if you have a wound or a diaper dermatitis that originally presents as just erythema with no candida, nothing else on, it's just a bright red bum. I always start with a nice cleansing of that system, because somebody say, well, I've just put some, you know, Zincofax on there. I don't know myself if there is stool or urine between the two. And so when I start, I always start fresh. I want to make sure that there's nothing in between those two layers. So I always start by gently cleansing it to start with, and make sure once you have erythema on that skin, do not rub. Do not, do not use any type of friction at all. You want to be very gentle and you just only want to pat it. I suggest when you're putting water on it that you use some type of, you know, bottle or syringe or something like that, not wetting the cloth and doing it that way. So you want to gently try to wash it away. But there are times it takes me a couple times of that cleansing before I actually get all the stool and urine off. And so make sure that that's, because again, it's not going to help to have it trapped in between. Then I apply a type of, always a barrier, so it'll have some type of zinc in it. And it's usually one that has a petrolatum in it that I can see. You can get some zinc products that are clear with petrolatum in it. Nice thing about that is I can watch how the redness is going away without completely removing that cream. If in this point you jump to a zinc cream that is like more like a paste that's sticking well, which we'll use later on, you can't see the progression of the wound or that erythema, whether it's going away or not. So try to use one that's a little bit more of an ointment and less of a paste that often, like I say, will contain some type of petrolatum. Put it on thick, and then with each diaper change, remove it with that. But that's how we will treat the initial stages of a diaper dermatitis. The next one is your skin is still intact, but you'll start to see some of those satellite lesions, or you start to see some candida forming on the skin. So you have to treat the candida. You can't leave it. And so again, I always start cleansing. So I'll clean the skin, pat dry, do all that. Then I apply a very thin layer of the antifungal cream over the area. And then I will put on top of that some type of barrier that contains zinc with that. And at this case, because I really want to make sure that that fungal cream sits next to the skin, I may be using more into a paste form of the zinc. So a little bit a stickier form of zinc. So I know that the candida cream or the antifungal cream actually stays next to the skin. And again, with each diaper change, only remove the zinc that needs to be removed and, you know, reapply it. And then only reapply the antifungal cream as directed by the physician or nurse practitioner who's ever ordered it for you. We do know that the, so that one, and then with each diaper change, do that. If you have now denuded skin or skin that is broken down, secondary to extension into the, now you're starting to lose the epidermal layer, and it depends if it's moving on into what the thickness is. This matters because as a wound care nurse, I like to know which level it is because it's going to heal in different ways. But suffice it to say, we can probably treat it in the same way to start with. And so the simplest thing is you want to, again, clean it well. And this is when I start to see that if it's looking, can I describe it as hamburger meat, that it's starting to look a little bit raw, broken down, more friable skin. So you're touching the skin and it's bleeding a little bit as you're wiping it away. I want to protect that skin as much as possible. And so I will always start with a paste with zinc. And I always try to find one that has some type of dimethicon in it, because I do want to give more protection to that area. And so, and I always show people when they bring in their zinc creams, I actually put it on my hand and I say, see how this sticks to my skin and I can't rub it off, and see how this is loose and it, you know, just wipes away easy. Get the one that's the paste. You want it to stick next to that skin and keep it there. Once that's on there, I get them to put a layer of the petrolatum on top of that. And so with each diaper change, I'm hoping that they just wipe away the petrolatum and keep my zinc product in place, right? So if you look at it and you say, oh, some of the zinc is worn away a little bit, you may need to add a little bit more of the zinc, but the petrolatum is there. Some of these paste zinc creams as well can stick to the diaper because they're so pasty. That's the other reason for putting the petrolatum in there on top of it, not added to the cream, right? So put it on top so that when you take away the diaper, it's not sticking to the diaper because the petrolatum is not going to stick to the diaper. So in that case, when it said denuded skin, no candida, I use the a zinc paste, often has a dimethicon in it, and then the petrolatum on top of it. So layering it that way. If the skin is really, really broken down, or I have almost like an ulcer forming, and it's, let's say, really close to that anal opening, and you know, the baby has runny stools and it's just a real mess, We talk about the use of stoma powder. So in essence, we can treat these as if you were an adult with an ostomy bag and skin broken down underneath, right? So we kind of treat it in that way. But this you have to do with extreme caution. And I'm saying it with caution because there are some hospitals that will not allow this to be used because it is a powder that we're now using, right? And so make sure that your region allows you to do this. But it's called what we call the crusting. And I get them to, again, cleanse the skin really well, including the wound. It all gets cleaned out. And then I will just I get them to take a little bit of stoma powder. They put it in a little medicine cup away from the baby. And then I get them to use a Q-tip to place it on the wound itself. So there's no aerialization of the product itself. It is never meant to be caked on. It is the finest, finest layer. It's a fine dusting that you're putting on. And when you put that, when you gently put that stoma powder on, you gently brush away all the excess. The stoma powder, a light layer of it, will stick to the wound that's opened. Okay, it will not stick to wound that it's not open. It'll only stick to the opened wound. So you can actually see little areas of this gentle, fine, fine layer of this stoma powder. Then I get them to take a non-sting silicone base. This is hard to say because I just want to say the name of the product. A no-sting silicone-based barrier film. And it's liquid that you put over, and it's silicone, so it's a dimethicon, and you just put it over and it seals it in. And so you're taking that stoma powder and you're sealing it in with this silicone film. Don't be afraid to put that silicone film on some of the healthy skin as well too. Like, it dries really quick. It forms a beautiful barrier. It's not going to cause any problem. We actually have some studies to show that it's safe, particularly in under 28 weeks gestation. So you're fine using it. And it'll give protection to that peri-wound skin as well, or that surrounding wound as well. And keeping it from the stool and urine hitting that as well. Once that happens, I always do another little fine layer of stoma powder on top of that. Not everybody does, but I do, just another fine layer. And then I'll put zinc on top of that. Again, a zinc paste, because I want to seal it in well. Well, actually, no, I shouldn't always say that. I'm going to reframe that. Once I use the film barrier on top of it, use a zinc cream that is more of an ointment. Because it's no longer being used as a barrier to the skin. It's kind of, you're using it as a barrier to the film itself. And if it's more of an ointment that's zinc containing the petrolatum, it's not going to stick to the diaper, easy to wipe away, reapply. And the stoma powder with the film, with a silicone film, only has to be done probably once in a 24-hour period. So that more ointment zinc, the zinc containing perhaps the petrolatum, easier to wipe away, and use those with each diaper change with that. You're okay if you want to wash the skin, during that time period, but you got that protection with that film. So, soap and water is probably okay with that as well too. Make sure, and oftentimes I'll have people say to me, John, I'm using your product with this stoma powder and it's just getting worse. And I'll go in, and I think the biggest issue is, number one, people cake it on. Like, I'll go in and the stoma powder will be thick. If you have thick stoma powder on, it will break the wound down further. So don't have it thick. It needs to be thin. And the other thing I find is that they tend to do it too often. They try to strip it down and they're trying to change it every 4 to 6 hours. It's meant for a long-term solution. So keep it on for at least 24 hours with that. So that's how I treat the diaper dermatitis, the denuded skin with an open wound without candida. So if we have the same mechanism, so the denuded skin with candida now, people will do it different ways, but I actually like antifungal powder. And I'll do it the same way. Put it in a med cup. I clean the area, put it next to the area where the areas that have the fungal. You can spread it around a little bit more, because if one area is going to get it, another area will likely get it too. And then I do a little bit of stoma powder with it as well. And then do the same crusting technique where I'll put the semi-permeable silicone film over top of it. And then top it up with some zinc to protect the wound care that I did. So that's kind of how I treat my diaper dermatitises, and then watch very carefully with the assessments to see how they heal.
You certainly have a passion for all of this. And I'm wondering, what drew you to wanting to help all these babies and the nurses and the health practitioners who are helping them understand this better?
Thanks. It's a great question. Yes, I do have a passion. I have to tell you that I started wound care, looking at wound care in the 80s. And before we had any protocols out, anything. And I developed one of our first skincare guidelines for the Calgary region at that time in the 1980s. And then, of course, the more I learned, the more I expanded, the more I, incorporated, some of the national, international guidelines that came out with that. And what was interesting was a lot of stuff that I was recommending was kind of came out in it as well, too. But skin has always been one of my big interests, like, burns on babies, diaper dermatitis. And I guess myself, I can't imagine sitting in a diaper and having some type of injury there and not having it healed quickly. And I think we can, with regular diaper dermatitis, I think we can get the healing happening fairly quickly.
I think just listening to all of that knowledge you've shared, right? Wow, we really lucked out with our kids, because obviously I did not understand everything that I should have.
When I was first asked to give this talk, I went, diaper dermatitis, like a 20-minute talk. Oh my goodness. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say. And then I went, Oh, actually, there's a lot to say. There's a lot of science that goes down behind
it. Yes, you know? Yes, it's fascinating. And I think the more we talk about it, the more people will understand all those little steps that all add up in such a way.
Yeah. And if I could have people do take home messages, number one, air drying a wound, bad. Like, I can't tell you how many times I hear healthcare professionals, well, let's just do it the old fashioned way of exposing it to air. I can give you a stack of papers to show you why that's a bad thing to do. So, you know, if we can, and I can say, if you can air the bum without a wound, I'm okay with that, but keep those caveats in mind. But don't air a wound. It will not heal, or it'll really retard its growth in doing that. You want to really think hard and long about the products that you're going to use, and don't just use a product because you like it or you read somebody else. Like, there's a science behind these products, and really have a look to see. And if you're not certain, and believe you me, sometimes I look at these products and I'm going, holy man, this, I don't know what I'm looking at. There's experts out there that can help you navigate some of that, you know, and I think it's worth doing that. And have a way of monitoring your diaper dermatitis incidence prevalence within your unit, and have a guideline in place for people to follow. And I would suggest, more importantly, make sure that those guidelines are being followed.
Thank you so much for sharing all of your wealth of learning and information with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Jeanne Scollin is a neonatal nurse practitioner at Rocky View General Hospital in Calgary. She is a graduate of the Wound Ostomy Continence Institution, which helped her in her knowledge of care of complex wounds.
Neo Chats is a project of the Canadian Association of Neonatal Nurses. This series is supported by an unrestricted educational grant by Pampers. The content producer and host is Jenna Morton. Technical production by Tosh Taylor on the Podcast Hub. For more information on the association, visit our website at www.neonatalcan.ca or our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram pages.